as I told my story, I think a lot of people can sit back and say, oh, like, well, you know, that worked for you, or like, you just did this, or you just did it. And it's like, but no, like, I faced anxiety, I faced fear, like, I faced those emotions. But I love what this gentleman, Aubrey Marcus, his podcast, and he had a guest on, and they talked about how, like, the Greeks believed that emotions visited us, right? So I took that and just said, like, oh, like, when I'm having negative self-talk, like, that's anger visiting me. That's insecurity visiting me, right? And when you say it, when you frame it that way, at least that helps me.
Welcome to the Cubicle Revolution. This is a podcast about finding another way. It's about redefining success, finding the courage to follow that inner whisper, and creating a career path that speaks wildly to the deepest parts of your soul. For the successful but unfulfilled, the yearning but bored, the stressed out, over-caffeinated, desperate for more kind of person. If you're wondering how you got here and how to get out, put your headphones on and press play. I'm your host, Candace Carlton. Let's get started. I originally asked Anthony Holloway to come on the Cubicle Revolution because of a blog that he had written about unexpectedly losing his job and how he secured a new one that he loved within 21 days. But we ended up talking about so much more. He talks about his meandering journey to find work that mattered to him, his journaling practice to get through tough times, how he conquers fear, and his experimentation with different side hustles to find work that mattered to him. The beginning of our chat is fun. The end will move you. Anthony is the manager of talent acquisition at Wobot, which is on a mission to help millions alleviate depression and anxiety through a conversational chat bot, which is really cool. He's also the founder and chief editor of Tech Dirty With Me, a Medium blog that seeks to inspire millennials to take risks and overcome imposter syndrome. If you love this episode, please share it with your friends, write a review, and keep the feedback via DMs, email, and text messages for coming. Thanks for listening.
Anthony is the first dude. I don't know if you realize this, Anthony. You have to represent.
I am. I was just telling my coworker this. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but yeah, I was like, oh.
I didn't know which direction the podcast would go. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to interview an old woman or like what's going to happen. So there was no, it's kind of like whatever human arrived that I think is a story to tell. So I'm excited to have you on to represent as the first dude on the Cubicle Revolution. So Anthony, you and I are connected because we both did the Alt MBA. For anyone who's listening, if you haven't done it, totally check it out. But more importantly, the reason I thought you'd be a great guest on this is because of a Medium blog that you wrote about essentially unexpectedly losing your job and then finding a new job within 21 days, which is kind of crazy. And all your pieces in there. But before we get started, do you want to give everyone just like a quick overview? You're based in San Francisco. Tell us about kind of the decisions, the highlights that have led you on your career so far.
Yeah, so I went to Rutgers University, go RU. I'm from New Jersey, originally born in Richmond, Virginia. And when I went to university, I initially wanted to be a civil engineer or an architect. Like, I loved drawing. I loved math and science. So I was like, you know what? Like, engineering or architecture might be for me. And I always had this dream of walking through a city like New York or Chicago and pointing and saying, like, that's my building.
Yeah.
So that's how I started university, and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And then I took a course called statics. And the professor was essentially like, if you can't see yourself doing this every day, then you're not an engineer. Class was just extremely hard. There was a tutor specifically for the class. And even the tutor said she had taken the class twice. And that's how difficult this class was. So I just told myself, I was like, this is really difficult. I don't enjoy it. So literally I got up in that class that day, took my book bag, walked to the registrar and switched my major. And then I ended up getting a bachelor's in mathematics. So with that, I said, you know, I could be a stockbroker. I could work for a bank. I could be a teacher. So I went into banking because at the time, you know, just as a college kid, like I need to pay my rent. I knew that, you know, it would be a good foundation for me. Like I could learn about business. So I did that for a few years. But yeah, it didn't really speak to my soul. So I found a community of folks, organization called
Stardom. So sorry, backtrack on that. When you say it didn't speak to your soul, tell us paint that picture for us a little bit. Like that time in your life, you're got this degree in mathematics, you're going to your banking gig, you're thinking it's a great base opportunity, probably getting paid pretty well. What was the experience like for you?
Yeah. So I started off as a teller.
Yeah.
Like I started off, like, I mean, you can't really get much lower than that in banking. So I started off on the ground floor. But for some reason, I noticed that I was really good with speaking with people. So there would be people that, you know, had checking accounts with us for a decade, and somehow I would get them to open a savings account. And they had never had one forever. So I just had this natural proclivity to be curious, to smile. I guess maybe because I'm a Southern born, Southern raised gentleman. I was raised by women, a very strong mother, my grandmother, great grandmother, aunts. So I think I always leaned towards like treating people with respect, kindness. And I worked there, and then we actually appointed a new CTO, chief technology officer. And I kind of was bugging him, and I said, hey, like, you're the CTO, you've been at the bank for about 3 weeks, and I noticed you still don't have a checking account open. Can I handle that for you? And he kind of just smiled and just really took me under his wing and took interest to me. Carlton West, a great mentor of mine. And from there, I started interning with him. I learned a lot, but I was just like, you know, crunching numbers and doing all that, like, it's not for me. Like, I knew people were my thing, but I didn't know what that looked like. Like, I knew my superpower to people, learning their stories, making people laugh, right? Like, genuinely taking an interest into folks, which made me a great bank teller.
So, like, even though you have this degree in mathematics and you're in this environment that is primarily numbers driven, you're like recognizing that really your superpower is like with people. Like, you're just like through that experience.
Exactly. And one of the main experiences that sticks out is that I remember hosting a paint and sip night, like one of those nights where like you paint, you have some wine. And I tried to get the bank to sponsor it for like a dozen employees.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't sponsor it. That, like, I think that right there, that was a turning point where I was just like, I enjoy doing this, like hosting these events, creating these spaces for people. But I didn't know what it looked like to do something like that for a living.
Right.
So the way that I kind of started to make a transition towards doing that for a living was with Starting Block. So Starting Block is a very similar community to All MBA. Mm. They have, you know, almost 4,000 members worldwide. And the way that I can explain it is, imagine you got Candace, Anthony, and 98 other people who were like-minded in one room for 5 days, and you talked about social justice, social impact, storytelling, rapid prototyping, design thinking. Like, I'm getting excited just talking about it.
Yeah.
And then you walk away after doing all of that, you walk away with a community of folks that are like, I got your back, and I want to see you succeed. So after that, I committed myself to finding my true calling, or finding like the profession that would help me express my soul, my passion.
How old were you at that time?
Starting Block had to be 2019. I'm giving my age away. I'm 30 now. So 4 years ago. So 26.
Okay. Great. So, I mean, that's young to be like, I'm going to find my purpose.
Yeah. So I was lucky. I'll just a little tangent here, which is I worked in that bank, and just the naive in me was just like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I want to at least make more money doing it. I was at a small bank and I got some great mentorship, minority owned, black owned bank. Like the CEO, the board of directors looked like me. So it was phenomenal exposure, but I was just like, I could make more elsewhere doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So I left and went to a big bank. I worked for Bank of America.
Yeah.
There I just felt like a cog
in
the machine. And then I left Bank of America and actually went back to the bank that I left.
Okay. Why?
And it was partially because of a little bit of timing, a little bit of fear, a little bit of like, I think I would have a good chance to work on some new and interesting things if I went back. It was just an option. And I didn't necessarily, I had a mentor at the time tell me, you know, hey, I never go backwards.
Yeah.
I would suggest you don't do that.
Yeah.
But going back, I actually got to work in a different role on some different projects. And I met a gentleman named Bill Davis. I'll never forget it. And we were working on some projects and we used to sit in the same office, just as close as you and I are right now. And I used to tell him about the books I would read and the podcast. And he introduced me to a gentleman named Torin Perez, who's still a really good friend of mine, author and speaker. And Torin said, hey, you got to do Starting Block. So even though I went backwards, I actually found the silver lining in Starting Block. Because had I not gone back, maybe I would have never been introduced to Starting Block.
Well, because I think that it's almost like we have this idea of like how our career paths should be. Like they're linear.
Yes.
They go up. Like you're constantly building, but sometimes like the funnest, most interesting parts, even the most pivotal parts are when you take a detour or a U-turn and you go back and you look at something or you take a sidestep, or as one of my previous guests said, you know, sometimes you don't want to climb the ladder and realize it's against the wrong building. So maybe you switch ladders, you know, like it's so interesting to me. I think, I don't know where we were sold this, to be honest. Like, you know, that
it's probably, I mean, where we were sold it is just, I mean, that could be a whole nother podcast, but I think it's social pressure. It's our parents wanting the best for us and that's all they know, right? Where, you know, the previous generations where you know, you work hard, you stay at a place and you retire, you get a pension and all is well, right? Mm. But technology and a ton of other things have disrupted that. So to maybe round it out a little bit, ended up doing Starting Block. And it wasn't immediate. It wasn't like I did Starting Block and I found my dream job tomorrow. That's not what happened. But it took a year. So yeah. I did Starting Block August 2015. And with Starting Block, they just like with all MBA, they allow people to come back and be coaches and to be mentors. And I was like, you know what? I love Starting Block. Let me go back and coach and mentor. And I did that August 2016. And I met someone who was also a fellow and who worked in California and introduced me to this amazing opportunity, which is essentially was my dream job that I moved from New Jersey to San Francisco for. So I met Cameron Clouchy, shout out Cam. And she said, hey, like, you know, there's this job, you know, it's a career coach and it's for a boot camp, a dev boot camp. So I wasn't even familiar with coding boot camps at the time. And they had been around for a few years, but I looked at the job description. I looked at the company and I was like, you know what? That could be fun. Like, that's all I said. That could be fun.
I feel like the best jobs I've ever had are the ones when I look at it and I'm like, oh, that sounds fun. Like, no other expectation except for, ooh, I could do that. That sounds fun.
Yeah. And I guess, and one thing that I want to mention before I kind of explain what the job was and what it looked like is that the reason that, you know, a part of my gut, and it's interesting, like, now I'm at a company where we, you know, we use AI and machine learning and neuroscience, but we actually have more neurons in our gut than we do in our brain. And when I found that out, I thought that was magnificent. And my gut told me that I would be good at this because previously I had done some thought experiments. I've always had side hustles. So that's another reason I knew the banking wasn't for me. But one of my side hustles was being a personal trainer and also being a dating coach.
Oh.
So I was like hitch for like, I only had one client. But I helped them find a date and they were happy and all these other things. So I used this platform called Thumbtack. And I was a personal trainer because people, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should be a personal trainer. This is while I'm working at the bank because I go to the gym. People are always asking me questions or for advice. What if I got paid to give people the advice that I already know about? So the first thing I did was I sought out personal trainers and they told me that if you're really serious about it, go get a personal training certification.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't have the time or the money to do that. So how can I test whether or not I would enjoy this? I just freelanced. I use a app called Thumbtack. It's just like Fiverr or any of these gig apps. And I essentially did it. And the personal training certification is about $1,300. And I actually made around $1,300 to figure out that I didn't want to be a personal trainer.
Wow. So much there. Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's unpack it all a little bit before we even get to like the juice of the matter of like, how do you find a new gig in 21 days? Because I love the formula that you created for that. But here's the question, right? Mm-hmm. I know so many people, myself included, where we have these passions, right? And they're kind of like, and we, sometimes they develop into like side hustles, right? Like I teach yoga and meditation. And so I do it because it feeds my soul. And so when I moved to Portland, I was like, you know what? I screw all this stuff. Like I'm going to open up a meditation studio, right? Like this is what I'm going to do. And I talked about it for years to people. But then when it actually came time to do it, I talked to people, look for guidance. And someone said to me, actually, Candace, I just don't see you in brick and mortar. Like, I feel like your energy will be stuck there. Like you like to create and move on. And so I decided, this thing I've been talking about for years, like is not going to happen. Likewise, when I was in my 20s, I would go and interview at all kinds of jobs because I decided I should have been in fashion. What was I doing in finance? This is ridiculous. And I'd go get all these jobs and then not take them, okay? It's because it was the exploration. But what's most interesting, I think, that holds people back from exploring possibilities are the hurdles that they feel that they have to go through that require time, commitment, and resources and money. But here you are out exploring and making money while you're exploring it. So like, how did you do that? Like, what were you thinking to yourself? Like, how did you think that you could do that and you could make money from it? Like, there wasn't this internal voice that said, who are you? Like, you know, go get your...
I'm so happy you said those words, internal voice, because a lot of all of this comes down to the narratives that we tell ourselves in our heads.
Right.
Right. So fortunately for me, like the narrative that I was telling myself was, I think I could be a personal trainer because when I go to the gym, people, I'm a friendly person. People ask me questions.
Yeah.
What if I could get paid to answer those questions? It started there.
Yeah.
And then it was like, and then, you know, I probably just had that conversation with myself in my head for a week, did nothing with it. And then it was like, yeah, I probably could. And then it was like, okay, well, how do I do it? So my first thing, and I think in retrospect, now I know, like, I've always been a recruiter. Because the first thing I do when I want to figure something out is I ask who. Hmm. So the first thing I did was like, okay, who do I know that's a personal trainer?
Yeah.
Like, let me survey these individuals. They're already doing it.
Right.
But then I spoke to them and I didn't get the answer I wanted.
Yeah.
all of them were like, consider, getting a degree in kinesiology.
Yeah.
Consider getting
all those barriers, all those hurdles. Okay. So what made you think, like, I don't need to do that?
What made me think that was just, again, the narrative I told myself was that I don't have the time or the money. And I think that most people would have stopped there.
Yes. That's why I'm asking. What was like,
My thing was, okay, like, I mean, and this is time when, Instagram still existed. So I'm just like, there's people who are like on Instagram or people who are on Facebook or start a meetup and they just do a boot camp where they just go to a local, local park and, maybe it's $5 or maybe it's free, but I'm like, I've attended those things. I've gone to those things. I was like, there has to be a way that I can find somebody that I can train. Like, I was looking at myself. I'm like, I don't have washboard abs, but I'm pretty in shape. I was like, even if all I did was taught someone the basics, it would be valuable to them.
But you know what? Like, I don't know if you realize, like, that internal dialogue is very rare.
Yes.
I mean, that's what we're all like in practice and training and reading to like develop and master of like, why not me? Like, why couldn't I do it? You know?
Yeah. So I will definitely spend some time like meditating on that and exploring like, why was it that I just told myself? And another thing I told myself was, I want to make $100 an hour.
Yeah.
And I was just like, if I could do that, like, I know that I can go into business for myself. Like, I was just like, that would feel so powerful and so magnificent. And I was like, how can I structure it? Freelance, hourly, package. How can I structure it so that I can make $100 an hour?
Okay.
So that's kind of what drove me.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I think I remember once saying to my boyfriend, if I could make $1,000 a month, just one month, I make $1,000 teaching yoga and meditation, then I'm going to quit my job. But I never put in that full commitment to it because I think there was still that level of self-doubt.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm really not sure why I was so confident in it. Like, it was kind of, I mean, you can call it confidence or you can call it naivete. Like, yeah. I just thought, like, every personal trainer, and now, mind you, these are personal trainers that are, like, friends of mine.
Yeah.
That I trust.
Yeah.
Who are telling me, if you're serious, this is the route you should go.
Okay, so how did you know that personal training wasn't for you?
Because I only had one client and it felt like I was babysitting them. Mm. And I was just like, I'm not getting fulfillment from this.
Okay. So you're like launching these kind of experiments as side hustles and feeling and like just doing them versus like going through. I mean, what a waste it would have been if you'd gone and got all the certifications. I need to discover that. I mean, what a great lesson. And then you're like, nope, this isn't for me. You discover this network of people and then you go and you get your dream job and it's in coaching. So what is the difference? How did you know that, now you're in recruiting, coaching? I think it's similar, it's all in the same like bucket. Tell us what it feels like to like be like, this is what I'm meant to be doing. How do you know?
So for me, it was a combination of I got this and I don't got this. So what I mean by that is to add some context and then answer your question directly is with the Dev Bootcamp job, again, the freelancing thought experiments with personal training gave me the confidence to say I could be a coach, right? I've done it. I've only done it freelance, but I've done it. Mm. It would be fun. And
I think fun is such an essential element. I love that you keep bringing that up. I think it's like crucial. Yeah.
it would be fun. And it was just, it was shaking up my life. Like I had to move to San Francisco. So your original question was like, how did I know? And it was, yeah, I think that, I think it was, had I not done, yeah, I don't really know how I just knew that when I was in the, when I was working at that bank, there was a ton of things that I did that I got fulfillment from, but I didn't get recognition for. And part, some of those things like organizing events was part of my job at Dev Bootcamp.
I mean, I've had that. I've experienced that. They're like, this is all great, but like, we didn't really care that much about it, essentially.
Yeah. So that's what it was. But to even back up even more, I think that some of our greatest moments where we grow the most come out of trauma and loss, right? Because with Dev Bootcamp, I actually interviewed and everyone on the team, it was a team of about 14 career coaches. Everyone on the team except my manager was female. So when I interviewed, I was actually sitting on this panel interview with like these 8 women just grilling me like, you've worked in banking, like you can't sit with us.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be a, like, who are you? And at the time, I would also say that I agreed to with them to an extent because I didn't do a great job of telling how my skills in banking transitioned to being a career coach. So when I interviewed, I made it all the way to the final round and then I was rejected. Now, mind you, I had the strongest possible referral. It's like as if, you know, Candace, you referred me for a job and was like, Anthony's great. I had him on my podcast. And then I get rejected.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. But again, I'm a big believer in community and contribution and service. So I just reached out to my manager. I reached out to everyone who I interviewed for. And I was just like, listen, I would love to work with you. I'm sorry it didn't work out. But like, I really dig your mission and what you're doing. Let's stay in touch. And 2 weeks later, they get back to me like, you know, someone actually quit. So are you still interested?
That's so great. Yeah.
One more interview. And I was like, heck yeah. So that's the story of how I moved to the Bay Area.
And I love that. It's so crazy. It's kind of like, if it's meant to work out, it works out, right?
Exactly.
Like it just doesn't really necessarily like work on your timeline. And I think possibly had you not reached out again and just said, hey, thanks, like you might not have got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, so that's a big leap there already. And so you already talked about meditation, but the question I always ask is, do you have a practice in connecting to your intuition, your gut, your instinct, your higher self, by whatever name you call it?
Yes. So this definitely, I would say I definitely have a spiritual practice, a morning routine that is like definitely keeping me grounded. And again, some of our best gems come out of trauma and loss. So after leaving Outco and getting this job offer from Wobot in 21 days,
sorry for everyone listening. That's like the job that you lost unexpectedly that we haven't talked about yet, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I think this is a great transition and a great question for you. So when I left there, I knew that I had to be like, literally, I've coached people and I've helped people get jobs.
Yeah.
But I knew like what it took to get a job, you know, what you really had to do, how you had to apply yourself. So that's when I really started journaling. Because what I needed to do was every single day, I needed to reconnect with my purpose. And okay, you know, why are you looking for a job? What energizes you? What contributions inspire you, right? What environments and cultures do you thrive in? Like every single day, I started my day by looking at that. And that blossomed eventually into my journaling practice. So every morning, you know, for about 25, 30 minutes, I just write out my goals and my purpose. And I just ask myself, you know, what are two or three things that I can do to move my vision forward? And I can get deeper into like what that looks like tactically on the day to day. But every morning, the first thing I do when I come into work is brew some coffee and sit down and write out what is my ultimate purpose and what are my areas that I'm focusing on to make me realize that.
Wow. So what is your purpose? What do you believe your purpose is?
So this is why I think journaling is valuable, because if you asked me that a year ago, I would have had an answer, but it would have been fluffy. And what journaling allows you to do is redefine yourself every single day. And that's how I approach it. So every single day, what I write out is my ultimate purpose is to do work that matters. So for me,
I mean, like, I just got goosebumps from that, because like, for me, I mean, that's what I think too. I mean, it's like, I think I'm to be of service and to create light, but it's doing work that matters. Cause like, it's all your energy every day.
Yeah. So so literally this is what I write, and I'm sharing this with you and probably the world for the first time, but my ultimate purpose, the way I write it down, and it's definitely going to change.
Yeah.
When I write down, do work that matters in all capital letters, period. Energize, laugh with, contribute to, and positively influence the lives and careers of 1 billion people.
Wow.
Manifest, and then I have just these phrases that come afterwards, like just kind of keep me grounded. And a few of them are manifest, be legit as AF, choose positive energy. The next one is greatness as a choice. And then the last one is don't major in minor things. So literally, I mean, like, all of that is my purpose.
I might have to adjust some of my practices, because I think that was like very clear, and it's like you're aligning it to like your bigger vision and purpose. And like, that's what I've learned through all of, you know, not through my own career, but from reading and also from a lot of my podcast guests. I think I was just majorly inspired by my friend Marjan, because she is like, I wake up every day to change the medical profession. And I'm like, oh my God.
I gotta set a
bigger purpose for myself. Like, sometimes my purpose was I wake up to make money. Like, I was like, it doesn't work though. It doesn't drive you the way like a purpose driven vision does, that's bigger than you. But like, not one that you just make up, one that like is inside of you, like that it just like lives there and you have no choice but to like listen to it and follow it.
Exactly. And it's been phenomenal for me, because every day I write that, and every day I approach it with curiosity. Like, is this my purpose? Can it be clearer?
Yeah.
And like, every day it gets a little bit better as long as I show up and do that. And besides doing that, first thing I do in the morning, use the bathroom, drink some water, and go for a walk. Like, I love going for a walk in the morning, and just sometimes I put music on, sometimes I'll put your podcast on, sometimes sometimes I won't have anything on.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I'll walk, and in my neighborhood, there's a lot of flowers that grow. There's a lot of people who plant flowers. I walk, I take pictures of like flowers in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
But it's just like for 15 minutes, just for me to like daydream about whatever and whatever comes to me. And then I come, I take a shower. And then the thing that I do right before I walk out of the door is I meditate and do push-ups, because what I find is that the meditation grounds me, allows me to like visualize how I want my day to go. I listen to this video. It's like this loop of Kobe Bryant. where he's talking about, like, you know, imagine if you wake up at 3 a.m. and you train from like 4 to 6, and then you train from 9 to 11, and then from 2 to 4, and then from 7 to 9. And he's like, if you do that every day over like 20 years, like, no matter what extra work your competition does in the off season, they can't catch up to you. So I listen to that every morning while meditating, and it just like inspires me and like grounds me. And then the push-ups like just pumps blood into me, and I'm like ready to go.
It's so fascinating to me because, you know, most of the time when I'm talking about these types of things, for some reason I'm talking to women. And so the way men and women think and approach this is so different. I mean, it's so interesting to me. I mean, you would never have a woman talking, like listening to something like that. But like, I totally get how that would move and inspire you.
Yeah.
But I love that yours is like, it's just, it's got such like a male flavor to it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Like, but again, this has been developed.
Yeah.
From that loss, from that kind of traumatic transition where I said like, I need this just for my sanity.
Well, that's why I started. I was like, I had to like, it's like, what I've discovered is if you don't have some sort of practice, and my practice goes on all day, actually. So, I mean, there's all things I could say about that. But if you don't have it, I don't know how you stay sane, to be honest, because like, we're crazy in our minds. Do you know what? Like, we're just crazy.
I don't know if it was Marjan or Lucia, one of them spoke about, you know, being like, if you drew this black dot on a piece of paper.
Oh, that was Lori.
Like that. Oh, okay. Yeah. And that you imagine it being like love and joy and just positivity. And like, anytime you step away from that, like there's distraction, there's fear. And that's what spiritual practices, whether it's meditation, mindfulness, allow you to do.
Exactly. It's just getting back into that love state. Like it's exactly, it's like the zooming out. And for me, you know, they do an exercise in the Alt MBA where you had to create measurements around work that you were doing. And my group at the time suggested that mine be joy. So now I measure my projects and possibilities and how much joy it will bring me. Because what I've realized is when I'm in a high joy zone, I'm in a high vibration zone, my creation is off the charts, my contribution is off the charts, and I'm actually able to create something that's way more meaningful for people.
Yeah. It's interesting because words have power, because the word that I associate that's synonymous with joy for me is energy. Mm. So like, that's one of the things that I wrote in my blog post and that I started to look at when I was looking for my next role, which is like, what work when I do it gives me more like
energy. Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yes. I totally know. Okay. So geez, we're going to have a full hour conversation almost. So tell us about developing that practice. Like, so essentially you go to work one day and they're like, you're out.
I just knew like for my sanity, I needed something to keep me on track. So I just opened up like a Google Doc. I actually love Dropbox paper.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful interface. And I had those questions. What work energizes me? What contributions inspire me? What work culture do I thrive in? What strengths do I enjoy exercising? And the last one was, what are my other requirements and deal breakers? And every day I came back to that constantly. And when I had an interview, I came back to that constantly. And like, just tried to filter every single thing through those lenses. And that is what I think helped me move so quickly.
Tell us about your equation to job hunting.
So my equation to job hunting is, I would say I'll break it into the strategic, like the very high level, like above the forest and like into the weeds. So first is like defining your big domino. And this can take a while. Like this isn't like, you're probably not going to do this in a week. Like, I think this really takes constant effort. So your big domino is, you know, just like, you know, Anna said on your podcast, is moving from success.
Oh, Lucia. Yes, Lucia. Yeah.
Right. So she, and I love what she said, which is like, you have to ask very high quality questions of yourself. And it's like, what's my purpose? Like, that is the most difficult question to, and I said, in retrospect, for years, I ran away from that question. So you have to ask yourself these very hard questions every single day. And eventually you start to recognize some patterns. So again, for the blog post, I narrowed it down to those five questions. What work energizes me? What contributions inspire me? What cultures do I thrive in? What are the strengths and skills I enjoy using? Mm-hmm. And what are my other requirements and deal breakers? Once you get very, very confident in answering those, and you do it for, say, like 7 days straight, you'll start to notice like, oh, one more question that I would ask is, what do other people tell me that I'm really good at that I don't even acknowledge or give myself credit for?
I think that's a key one, because the things that we're good at, we think everyone's good at, right?
Exactly. Like, oh, like, these are just doodles. Like, no, you're a master in calligraphy. Like, like, own it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So first, I say define your big domino, right? That's like your purpose, your ground, your foundation. And then from there, then you can start executing, because what's going to happen is you're going to start reaching out to people like Candace for a referral. You're going to start applying to jobs online. Maybe recruiters are going to start, you know, contacting you. And now you have a filter to decide on what you should spend more time on. But you only can define that filter if you ask yourself these very difficult questions and always keep coming back to it. So let's assume you have your big domino defined and you know where you want to go. The next thing I would say is really two things. One is, be a mad scientist, right? Test like a mad scientist, right? And I would say, use that language. Language is powerful. So that's why, like, I became a personal trainer, right? While I was at Dev Bootcamp, I actually launched a podcast, right? I launched a podcast and I just tried it because I wanted to have these amazing conversations, right? So you got to be a mad scientist. You got to go to the events. You got to bother people, like, so test. So the tactical piece where you can start actually getting interviews, I got this from a gentleman named Lou Adler. He's been a recruiter, top recruiter for 25, 30 years. And it's the 60-20-20 job hunting strategy. So 60% of your time, you should spend networking, asking people for referrals, thinking about like, who are the amazing people that I know, that I trust, that could really vouch for me. And if you define your big domino, now you can have a robust conversation with them. Like, hey, I'm leaving, you know, I think it was Anna or, Anna, like, I'm leaving Sony. And, you know, but I know what speaks to my soul. Do you know anybody that's doing this type of work? And eventually, if you spend 60% of your time doing that, you'll get interviews.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So the next 20% is working on your resume and search engine optimization. So I'm actually building a course around this. But what you can do with your resume is that there's a clever trick called Clever Boolean, where you can search keywords and you can search resumes within the niche that you're trying to get into. So say, for example, you've been in sales, but now you want to transition to be a web developer. Well, what does a web developer's resume even look like? I can get into it more later, but you can use something like SEO and Boolean searches to actually find resumes of web developers in real life.
Yeah. And then sorry to interrupt. I'll get all these links from you for the show notes.
Most definitely. Yeah. Okay. I did a presentation on it. So I actually have them for you. So that's 60% of your time should be on networking, finding referrals. 20% of your time is spent on making sure your resume has the things that recruiters are looking for. And then the last 20% of your time is doing creative outreach. So that's, say, for example, kind of the way that I got on this podcast with you, right? I reached out to you and I said, hey, like, that thing you're doing is really cool. And I was just like, how did you do that? Like, I was just curious. I was like, how did you do that with like the visual and your podcast? Like, it just looks so cool. And one thing led to another. And I said, hey, like, how can I support you? Right. So if people do that more often to say, hey, like, I noticed that Twitter is doing this thing. And there's actually this mobile feature that I wish Twitter had. I wrote a whole blog post on it and would love if you would want to talk about it. Like, I guarantee I'm a recruiter. If someone reached out to me and said, hey, there's this thing that I think I can improve in your product, would you want to talk to me more about it over coffee? I'm going to make time for that person, as opposed to the person who says, hey, are you hiring?
Yeah, I also love Seth Godin brought this up in the podcast fellowship that I took. And he was saying, listen, like, if I think it was him, and I think it was totally him, or it could have been Gary V. Anyway, one of them, props to them. They said something like, if you want to transition careers, and let's just say you want to be an accountant, it's for better, like an accountant, create something. So create a podcast and reach out to the CFOs of the companies that you like. And in the subject line, say, do you want to be on my podcast? He's like, because no one asks them to be on a podcast. Like, you know? And then you have their contribution. You're learning about this new role that you want to take, this whole new area. And you're simultaneously expanding your entire network through this practice. And so when an opportunity comes up, those people are going to think of you.
Yeah, it was Gary Vee. He called it the high school party rule.
What was it?
Because he said, just think about the kids who were like C-level popularity, but threw a party and invited all like the really popular people. Like, automatically you get a bump in popularity by doing that. So if you invite people on a podcast, it's like, people love to talk about themselves.
But it's on a, I think the important thing is it has to be an authentic thing and of contribution. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. But to like not just be chasing like the shiny objects the whole time, but to be creating something meaningful. And I think people really miss that creative outreach part. It's like they spend most of their time on their resume, very little time networking, and definitely very little time being creative or like having kind of a creative outreach.
And before I became a career coach, I was doing the same thing. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, define your big domino and network, work on your resume and do some creative outreach, give some value and people will want to have coffee with you.
I love that. Okay. So you've been so generous in all your time. I've got a few rapid fire questions just to like close out. How do you define success?
Inner peace. Do you want me to elaborate? No, that's good.
Okay. I get that. Yeah. Advice to your younger self.
Advice to my younger self. I had a few things. Journal more, express gratitude more, be more intentional, love deeper, speak less, ask more questions. And practice intentionally decoding what I feel in my gut. And like my, I love how you say it, your inner whisper.
Yeah.
Spend more time listening to it and acknowledging and observing that inner whisper.
What does the cubicle revolution mean to you?
We're in this period for the first time in history of human existence where the barriers to entry for almost anything have never been lower. And that's a beautiful thing, but that's also like what holds people back. So the cubicle revolution to me means self-exploration, and constantly and consistently sharing your gifts with the world. Because if you do that, people will start to notice it. People will start to notice that authenticity And I think your podcast is a real example and a tribute to that. You're doing amazing work. So
thank you. I so appreciate that. And I love that you've come on as a guest. Where can people find you and follow you?
So people can find me. I'm a recruiter. I'm a networker. I love working with people. So my platform of choice is LinkedIn. I know most people don't spend time there, but I'm also pretty active on Twitter. And you can also find me at Tech Dirty with me on Twitter and Medium. Medium is my blog. And Facebook too, but I really like Twitter. I kind of just acknowledge and watch things, but I don't tweet much. So.
And so if anyone wanted to reach out to you for any kind of advice, LinkedIn sounds like it.
Absolutely. LinkedIn.
Cool. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a treat. And I think you've done all the dudes a good service.
I was sweating so much listening to those other women. But again, that's the narrative. Like, I was just telling myself, I was like, are you good enough to be on here? Like, do you have anything to offer? But you got to kind of quiet it and just say, yeah, you know, I think I do.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. Okay.
All right. It was a pleasure, Ken.